we bring you the following special presentation.
An old cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a plowing through the ragged sky, and up the cloud he drove.
This is Dan Klingler, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, with Western Short Stories. Today we're going to be starting a series of four Western short stories that are part of a novella from a new author, at least new to us, M.K. McClintock. And this novella is entitled The Women of Crooked Creek, a Crooked Creek short story and novelette collection. The Dust Jacket says, "This is a story of four courageous women, an untamed land, and the daring to embark on an unforgettable adventure. The war is over between the North and the South, but the battles at home are just beginning. If you love stories of bravery and courage with unforgettable women and the men they love, you'll enjoy The Women of Crooked Creek." M.K. McClintock delivers another extraordinary Western series with more to come. And this was copyright 2016 and is from Pack Saddle Press in Big Fork, Montana. The stories are entitled Emma, Hattie, Briley, and Clara. We will very likely have additional time available when we finish the Emma story, and if we do, we'll read a brief passage from another Western story and then continue in our next recording with Hattie. Once again, this is Emma of Crooked Creek by M.K. McClintock. Crooked Creek, Montana Territory, September 1865. Thunder woke Emma from the first decent night's sleep she'd had in months. She looked around at the dark moon. It wasn't the crash of thunder, or even that grizzly her neighbor swore she saw last week. The front door of the one-room cabin reverberated as the pounding continued. Emma reached for her husband's old Colt Navy revolver, the only thing he'd left behind when he went to fight and die in the war. Her husband had taught her how to use the pistol on the long wagon ride out west, but only small critters ever saw the bullets from the well-oiled gun. She pulled back the lever and pushed away the heavy quilts. On bare feet, she moved along the wall to the small window by the front door. The moon was high but dim, and all she could see was the outline of a man hunched over. She stepped back when the thunderous knock was accompanied by a plea. "Anyone in there?" Emma considered not responding. No lamps were lit, but the remnants of logs burned in the fire. The man would not believe the cabin was empty, and if he did, he might decide to come in anyway. "Who are you?" Emma quelled her nervousness. "Thank God, Casey Latimer, ma'am." Latimer. Emma slowly lifted the bar blocking the door. She moved a few paces back. "Come on in, but be warned, I'm armed." The door swung open and the man stumbled inside, falling at Emma's feet. "If it's all the same to you, ma'am, I'll just stay here." Emma waited, but she only heard the man's heavy and ragged breathing. With one hand holding the Colt, she lit a lamp and returned to stand beside the stranger. Her bare feet stepped in something wet and sticky. She lowered the lamp until it illuminated the small pool of blood seeping between the cracks in the boards and staining the edge of the rug. "Gracious, Mr. Latimer, what have you done?" Emma set the lamp on her eating table, and after a deep breath and moment's hesitation, she laid the pistol down beside it. "You might have at least fallen inside far enough for me to close the door." Emma gingerly pulled underneath his arms, but he was too large. Then she tried to move his legs enough to secure the door against any animals that might smell the blood and come looking for an easy meal. She spent a few seconds recovering from the exertion of maneuvering the long legs and studied her unexpected guest. "At least you had the good sense to pass out." Emma hurried to lay the quilts from her bed on the floor. She grit her teeth and raised the edges of her long white nightgown. Once more, she attempted to drag the unconscious man, but to no avail. "I want to apologize in advance, Mr. Latimer." She rolled him once, hefting his body closer to the fire. From there, she managed to first lift his torso and then his legs onto the quilts. Long strands of copper hair fell from her loose braid, and she quickly secured the heavy mass before returning to her patient. "Let's see what you've done to yourself." Emma removed his long coat away from the injured side. The dark shirt beneath was soaked through. "There's no help for it. The shirt must go." Emma hurried to gather supplies and retrieve the lamp from the table. She cut through his wool shirt and peeled back the edges. A wound, long and deep, scored the side of his chest, curving along the ribs. Her concentration set, Emma soaked up the blood around the injury. Methodically, she cleaned the wound and checked for signs of dirt or foreign material. Satisfied that she'd done all she could, Emma threaded one of her needles and stitched the skin until a meticulous line of silk sutures replaced the jagged cut. Emma sat back on her feet, rolled her shoulders, and then reached for an amber bottle. She spared a quick glance at the patient before pouring a healthy dose of the liquid over the stitches. Latimer twitched and his body shifted, but his eyes remained closed. Once she'd done all she could, Emma gathered her supplies and cleaned up the blood from the floor. A few more logs were added to the dying fire, and she tossed the bloody rags into the ash. The cloth ignited, and the flames returned to life. She draped the last blanket from her bed over the long body. After she scrubbed her hands in a basin of cold water, she sat in her grandmother's rocker. Her husband had lovingly transported the rocker and her books across the plains and over mountains because a stubborn wife had refused to leave them behind. The colt rested in her lap. "You better wake up in the morning, Mr. Latimer. I don't want to have to explain a dead man in my cabin to the sheriff." Emma jerked awake at the sound of riders coming toward the cabin. One look told her that the morning sun had barely kissed the mountain peaks. Her guest still slept. Emma slipped a coat over her nightgown and pulled back the curtain covering the window. Two riders, and that was one too many. She could shoot what she aimed at, but wouldn't manage more than one before they got her. "Anybody home?" The shout came from the taller of the two men. Emma glanced down at Mr. Latimer. Now would be a good time to wake up. She returned her attention to the men outside, hoping they would simply go away, but the taller one dismounted. Colt in hand and ready, Emma unbarred the door and opened it enough to look out, but not enough for the men to see inside. "What do you want?" The man's eyes trailed her from bare feet to loose hair, and Emma shuddered. "Blacksmith in town said the doc lived out here." She nodded once. "Is someone hurt?" "No, ma'am. We're looking for a fellow who might have ridden by here. He'll be looking for a doctor." "Who is the man?" "That's not your concern, ma'am. Has anybody come by?" Emma bristled. "I may have helped someone last night. Knife wound." "Did you fix him up?" "I'm a doctor. I don't choose who I help." "Did he say where he was going?" Emma smiled. "He didn't say much of anything." The man tipped his hat and stepped forward. Emma raised the Colt. "Keep back. I'm not inviting you inside." He laughed. "You won't have much choice." The stranger turned and called out to his friend, "Tie up the horses, Jib." "The lady said you weren't invited." Emma stilled as the door opened wider. Her hand dropped to her side, but she managed to keep the Colt steady and pointed toward the stranger. "Latimer." The man returned his gaze to her. The noise he made sounded to Emma like the growl of a trapped raccoon. "Stay inside." Latimer, much like the grizzly bear she witnessed from afar facing down a pack of wolves last winter, faced the two men. Emma ignored his order and pushed past until she stood in front of him. Latimer leaned heavily against the exterior wall while blood seeped through his shirt. Emma held the Colt dead center at the man's chest. "I don't know who you are or why you're here, but you'll leave now or die where you stand." Emma's bravado didn't impress either man, if their laughter was any indication. She felt Latimer's hand on her shoulder. Emma stood her ground and moved until her back pressed firmly against his chest. She heard his heavy breaths and knew he didn't have much time before he collapsed again. The man on the ground placed one foot forward, but paused when Emma pulled the lever back on the pistol. "When I put a bullet in someone, I don't bother taking it out again." "Come on, Morgan, we'll have another chance." Jeb, who had not dismounted, tossed Morgan his reins. "You'll be sorry, Doc, and you too, Latimer. This isn't done." The pair rode away, glancing back every now and then until they were little more than specks of dust on the horizon. Latimer was growing weaker. Emma turned and circled his waist with her arm. That was foolish. She helped him struggle inside and managed to take part of his weight and walk him back to the makeshift bed by the fire. His strong form landed with a gentle thud on the blankets. "I don't suppose you have anything strong and liquid in this cabin?" Emma looked him over, her eyes assessing him. "Strong drink is not what you need right now." She left him alone and instructed him to remove his coat and what was left of his shirt. "I was unable to completely remove your shirt last night, and I need to check for more wounds." "There aren't any." "How can you be certain? You appear to be in worse condition than I first thought." Latimer folded his long duster over twice and set it aside. "The only other wound you'd find is a healed-over hole when I caught a bullet in the shoulder." Emma wiped her hands dry and carried the bowl of warm water and clean cloths across the small room. She pointed at what remained of his shirt covering the injury. "I'll have to restitch that." Latimer opened his shirt and exposed the wound. Emma knelt down beside him and attempted to work at the awkward angle. She leaned back. "You'll need to lie down." She didn't appreciate the smirk that flashed across his face, but she ignored it and set to work. Once she was certain the laceration wouldn't open again, she sat back and studied her patient. His body had not twitched once as she restitched the wound. Latimer lowered his eyes and gently pressed his fingers around the clean and precise stitches. "David was right about you. You're a fine doctor." Latimer looked back up at her, and she saw both sincerity and secrets in his eyes. "He was a good man, Mrs. Hawkins." "Yes, he was." Emma walked to a large trunk at the end of the bed and lifted a heavy black shirt from beneath a pile of her clothes. "You'll need this." She then moved a few of her personal items to the other side of the cabin. Her home boasted only one room, but a small section allowed for privacy when a curtain was strung across. Emma had only closed the area off once when her brother brought David's body back to Crooked Creek. Her brother enlisted for the North after that, and it was the last time she saw him alive. And a good friend. Emma no longer had tears left to shed for a man she barely knew but once loved. Yes, he was. With the curtain closed, she changed into a clean dress and made hasty work of cleaning her teeth. When she pushed aside the barrier, she saw that Latimer was no longer where she left him. A study of the area outside her window showed her that he'd been a gentleman despite his injuries. She stepped onto the front stairs with a heavy shawl draped over her shoulders. "You shouldn't move around." "David wouldn't forgive me if I had remained inside." His fingers moved over something hard and metal, grasped in his palm. But Emma could not see what it was. "I was afraid you wouldn't know me. I had nowhere else to go." Emma stared out over the green pasture below a backdrop of snow-peaked mountains and blue sky, dotted with clouds ready to quench the earth. David sent a letter at the beginning of the war. It told of an old friend he met on the battlefield. "We went our separate ways after West Point, but when I wrote and told him that I'd volunteered for the sharpshooters, he was hell-bent on joining, too. It was as though the years in between had never happened." Latimer continued to press down on the round object. "I told him not to come. He was safe up here and might have spent those 4 years running off bandits and natives, but he would still be alive." Emma smiled and closed her eyes. She could barely see him in her mind, but she remembered everything about him. "It wasn't in him not to go. He came west for me, but his heart and loyalty were still with his family in the east." "Do you ever miss home?" Emma shook her head. "When David first left and I was here alone, I thought of going back, but my life was here. I wanted no part of that war or the life of despair left behind. The people of Crooked Creek are my family now." Latimer opened his palm and handed her the object. "He wanted you to have this." Emma lifted the gold pocket watch from Latimer's hand. Finally, she felt the tears fall. "I gave this to him for luck. My father brought it with him from Scotland." She smiled, wiping the moisture from her cheeks. "David told me a man doesn't find luck. He has to make it." Emma turned her tear-streaked face. "Thank you for bringing it home." She tucked it into her pocket and crossed her arms over her chest. "What will you do now?" "I didn't share David's love for the city. This here," Latimer glanced out toward the mountains, "this is the life a man is meant to live." He looked at her now. "Did you set out to settle in Crooked Creek? Life in Montana is a significant change from the comforts of life in the east." Latimer shifted, but Emma saw the pain it caused him. Instead of answering his question, she said, "You can't ride until you're healed. Let's get you back inside." "Is there a hotel or boarding house in town?" Emma nodded. "There's a boarding house, but I have a small room behind my clinic. I sleep there from time to time when a patient needs looking after. It's comfortable, and you're welcome to it." Latimer grinned. "I don't know how much looking after I'll need in a day or so, but I am grateful to you for saving my life." Emma indicated his wound. "How did you come by that injury, Mr. Latimer, and who were those men?" "Please call me Casey, an old argument from the war." "Only if you'll call me Emma." She watched him struggle to his feet and step a few paces away. "Will they be back?" "Probably." Latimer looked back out over the land. The horses grazed quietly on early autumn grass. "They won't hurt you, I promise." "I don't intend to let them." Emma stood and brushed off her skirts. She studied the land on which she'd made plans and began to build dreams. David's departure had saddened her, but it hadn't shattered her hope or her determination. Everything she fought for was here. The land was more than she could handle alone, but she refused to relinquish even a small part of her plans and leave any of it behind. "I'll fix this breakfast, and then, while you're resting, I need to get into town." She held the door open, waiting for him to come back inside. The town of Crooked Creek had welcomed David and Emma Hawkins nearly 5 years ago. Like Emma, the town was built on hope and survived on strength. A war couldn't change that, and though it happened more than 2,000 miles away, the war had changed her and everyone else who'd sent loved ones into a battle no one wanted but knew was necessary. Emma drove the pair of horses through town, the sturdy wagon rattling over the ruts formed in the mud by the last heavy rain. She preferred that Latimer remain at the cabin for another day to rest, but he insisted on joining her, and Emma discovered that he was more stubborn than she. "Sorry about that." Emma pulled on the reins and climbed down from the wagon. Latimer managed to step down, but she saw him wince when his feet hit the ground. "Dr. Hawkins!" The young boy's voice had Emma spinning around, one hand on Latimer's strong arm. "Malachi Perkins, why aren't you in school?" The young boy bent over, attempting to speak while catching his breath. "It's the teacher, ma'am." Emma lifted her bag from the wagon to follow the boy, but he shook his head and ran in the other direction. "We need the sheriff." Emma hesitated, then told Latimer to wait for her. She ran down the dirt road to the small building used as a schoolhouse. Miss Patterson, the teacher for only 3 months, lay on the board floor between the center desks. Emma asked the older children to clear the room while she bent over to examine the teacher, still alive. The children didn't move. Emma's eyes drifted to their frightened faces. "Doreen," she called out for the oldest girl, but Doreen remained still. Emma's gaze followed the girls to the man in the shadows by the back door. Morgan stepped into the light. "I said we'd be back." Emma lifted herself off the floor, nearly tripping on her skirts. She moved to stand between the children and the man she recognized as Jeb, standing by the back door. Emma pushed the remaining children closer to the front of the classroom. "Don't go and do that, Doc." She stared into hard, dull blue eyes and cringed at the sight of black teeth showing between a wicked smile. "You don't need them for whatever you have planned. I'll stay, but let them go." After a brief consideration, Morgan nodded once. Emma didn't hesitate and quickly hurried the children out of the schoolhouse. She remained by the open door until the last child was far enough away. She heard the shouts coming from town and watched as young Malachi, who bravely escaped unnoticed, stood next to the others outside, the aging sheriff beside him, a hand on his pistol. Strangely, he did not move forward. Emma had treated the sheriff for gout the week before. It was time for him to retire, and hoped someone else came quickly enough to help. Casey Latimer was nowhere to be seen, and she hoped he would stay put, considering his condition. Morgan stepped forward. "Close that door." The heavy click of a chamber on a pistol forced Emma to comply. "Now what? The sheriff is out there. You won't get away." His laugh sickened her, but she managed to keep her expression neutral. "I don't intend to. When that good-for-nothing didn't die from my knife, I expected him to find the nearest doc, and the fool came here. Doc Hawkins, that is your name, right?" Emma nodded. "Wife to that Yankee, David Hawkins?" Emma stiffened, realizing this was much more than settling an old score from the war. "What is it you want?" "You want me, Morgan." So much for staying put, Emma thought. She trained her eyes on the open door, the deep and comforting voice giving her a small measure of hope and an equal measure of fear for Latimer's life. The man slowly turned, and Latimer spoke with an almost cavalier attitude. "Jeb won't be coming to help you." "I didn't hear no gun." "I didn't fire one." Latimer stepped into the schoolroom and closed the back door. For every step he took forward, Morgan took two back, until he was pressed up against the wall. Emma's focus shifted to Miss Patterson when the other woman's arm twitched. Mindful of both Latimer and Morgan's positions, Emma crawled a few feet to the teacher and felt for a pulse. Glass from the small window in the room shattered, spraying bits toward her. She covered the teacher's body with her own as best she could and almost feared looking up when a thud and deep-throated scream filled the small space. Miss Patterson shifted beneath her, but the woman's eyes remained closed. Emma raised herself up and looked around. Morgan lay slumped against the wall, sitting in shards of glass, his hands pressed against his leg while he writhed and shouted in pain. Never one set to panic, Emma quickly shifted her eyes until they settled on Latimer, barely standing against the door frame. Emma pushed herself off the ground and rushed to his side before he collapsed. "I'm grateful you came, truly, but let's see to your wound." The sheriff would take care of Morgan now that the gunfighter was less of a danger, so Emma could once more see to Casey and Miss Patterson once she got him back to her clinic. Latimer smiled, but his low laughter turned to a cough. She helped ease him down to rest on the floor. "Is it as bad as it looks?" Emma pulled aside his coat to see not only the blood from the wound, but open cuts from the fight with Morgan. "Worse, I imagine." 3 days had passed, and Emma still knew nothing of why the men came searching for Latimer, or why they spoke with such disdain toward her husband. Casey had caught fever. In the daylight hours he slept almost peacefully, but when darkness came, he thrashed as though demons of the war haunted him. Emma had seen it before in some of her patients, but had yet to find a way to relieve these men, and sometimes women, of their nightmares. It wasn't until Casey's fever broke and his laceration showed signs of healing that Emma managed a full night's sleep. She checked on Casey, who still slept, and then stepped out onto the front porch of her clinic. The townsfolk went about their business, a few stopping to say hello as they passed by. Emma closed her eyes and soaked in the rays of light from the morning sun. The clatter of wagon wheels and gentle clip of horses' hooves drew her attention to the small regiment of soldiers riding into town. When the squad of soldiers stopped in front of her clinic, the officer, a lieutenant of strong bearing and striking features, looked down at her with fierce green eyes. "We're looking for the doctor." "I'm Dr. Emma Hawkins." The lieutenant hesitated for a moment. Emma was used to the curious glances and uncertainty from strangers, especially men, who weren't used to women doctors. "We have an injured man in the wagon." Emma pushed away from the beam and walked swiftly to the wagon. A man lay half-covered with a wool army blanket that had seen a few battles of its own. The lieutenant climbed down from his mount and stood beside her. "We had to cut away some of his clothes, and our men did what they could in the field, but he's caught an infection." She pulled back a corner of the blanket to reveal a blue, almost black, discoloration on both legs. She felt the skin, clammy and warm, beneath her touch. "Can you help him?" Emma looked up at the lieutenant. "His gangrene is severe. He might not keep the legs." "Please do what you can, doctor." Emma nodded and directed the men to carry the soldier inside. She closed the door to the small room where Latimer slept. She washed her hands and cleaned the soldier's legs. A young man of no more than 20 years, he reminded Emma of her younger brother. "Lieutenant, I need you to stay and help, but your men must wait outside." Emma mixed together medicinal powders, grinding them with a stone, before setting them in a cup and pouring hot water over them. She gently raised the soldier's head, asking the lieutenant to hold him steady, while she slowly poured the drink down the young man's throat. Emma glanced up at the lieutenant. "That should make him a little more comfortable while I tend to him." The legs were another matter, and after carefully examining them, she did her best to hide her despair. "I cannot save the legs. The infection is likely gone to his bones, and it will continue to spread and probably kill him." "What are his chances?" Emma raised and dropped her shoulders. "I don't know. The infection may already have spread too far. Removing the legs may only quicken his death. I can alleviate some of the pressure and give him medicine for the pain and to help with the infection after the surgery. You'll need to hold him down." Emma pointed to the wash basin and gathered the instruments and bandages she would need. "How did this happen?" The lieutenant hesitated, his eyes not wavering from hers. "Two men robbed a bank a week back. Corporal Fenton here was in the contingent who went looking for them. I only just arrived from Washington and found him like this at camp." Emma shifted uncomfortably. "Who were the men?" "Morgan and Jeb Allen. brothers who'd been robbing and killing since they deserted about a month before the war ended. Southerners? Yes, ma'am, and we've been charged now with bringing them in, dead or alive, for their crimes during and after the war. The door creaked behind Emma, and she noticed the new direction of the officer's eyes. You'll have to take one of them dead. Morgan is over at the sheriff's. The doc here patched him up, so he's all yours. Can the man not follow simple instructions and stay in bed? Emma wondered. Mr. Latimer, if you're pulling your stitches again, you'll end up back on this table where this poor young soldier is right now. The officer started in surprise. Casey Latimer? Latimer nodded and stepped up to the foot of the table. Blood seeped from the thin cuts Emma made in the boy's legs. My commander told me to warn you that the Allens were headed your way. They found me. Emma wrapped the wounds with white cloths, the stark contrast between blood and bandage a painful reminder of her husband's battered body ravaged by war. Lieutenant, the pressure should be more bearable, and I'll give him morphine for the pain. How long? Aware of what he was asking her, Emma said, a few days, perhaps a few weeks, he can remain here. Appreciate that, ma'am, but I know the boy's family, and I prefer to take him home. It's only a few days' journey. Can he make it? Cautious, Emma could not make any guarantees. If he survives the night, then he'll have a chance to make it home. Thank you, ma'am, Dr. Hawkins. The lieutenant tipped his hat. My men will be by to collect him in the morning. Emma watched the officer leave and lowered herself to the bench against the wall. The procedure had taken her a little more than an hour. She tended to lose time while she operated. Latimer lowered himself down to the unoccupied portion of the bench. You look better today. Thought you might lose me? Emma leaned her head back and closed her eyes for a few seconds. I knew the first night in my cabin that you would survive. Were it not for your stubborn foolishness, you might have healed sooner. She settled her head back against the wall. I didn't have a chance to thank you for saving me and Miss Patterson over at the school. Thank you. He nodded absently. Is the teacher all right? Yes, just a few bruises from the fall and a painful cut where she was hit on the head, but nothing serious. Emma sat forward, her eyes watching the young soldier's chest rise and fall with each shallow breath. I've had enough of not knowing. I must insist you tell me why the Allen brothers came after you. It's not a pleasant story. She stared at him with resolve until he stood and walked to the table, his gaze dropping to the battered body of the young soldier. It was after the battle at Fort Henry. Emma stiffened. It was a short time after that when David was returned to her. The skirmish was small but fatal. David and I were with a small group of scouts when we came upon our targets. We split up, but one of them, the smugglers, they'd proven to be more ruthless than the worst of the southern soldiers, found David and killed him, though not before he took down a few of them. I didn't get there in time because I was on the other side blowing up the barn and wagons they used to store munitions. Two of the Allen brothers died that day, and two got away. You would have killed them that day in the cabin. I would have tried, Latimer grinned, but a stubborn spitfire had other plans. Emma's smile was slow to form, but when she did, it felt good. She returned to the table where the soldier's breathing came easier. You must have seen this before on the battlefields. I've treated a few cases of gangrene, but nothing this severe. Latimer nodded. I wish we had more doctors in the field. Then maybe a lot of young men might have made it home, even if only to say goodbye. The next morning, Emma watched the lieutenant and his soldiers drive away with young Fenton in the back of the army wagon, prepared as comfortably as they could manage for the long journey. The boy was strong and had a good chance of making it home before he passed. Latimer stood beside her, his presence a new and welcome part of her life. Some of the townsfolk also stopped and watched as the wagon rolled out of Crooked Creek. "This is a nice town you and David found. It's certainly a sharp contrast from life out east, but it's home, and I'm content here." Emma watched a few children playing in the tall grass near the school. Classes wouldn't resume fully until Miss Patterson mended, but Doreen offered to teach a few lessons each day. Emma turned to Latimer. "Will you walk with me? I have something to show you." Latimer stepped off the boardwalk and held out his arm. Careful not to brush up against his bandage, Emma looped her arm through his and settled her palm on his arm. They walked past the school and church to the top of a hill overlooking the town. She released her arm and knelt down in front of a simple headstone. He would have wanted to say goodbye. Latimer joined her on the ground and pulled a knife from the belt of his pants. "I've been carrying this with me ever since the night David died." Emma stiffened. "That's what killed him?" Latimer nodded. He dug beneath the grass down to the dirt and set the knife into the earth, covering it over. "I'm sorry he's the one who didn't come home to you." His hand rested against the grave. Emma reached out and covered Latimer's hand. "David lived a good life, and he wouldn't wish your death just so he could be here. He talked of the plans he'd made with you, often. David was a wonderful man, and he would have stayed in Montana for me, but it's not where he wanted to be. I knew that in my heart. If the war hadn't killed him, this wilderness might have." She pulled her hand back. Latimer stood and helped her up, but kept her fingers locked with his. Emma turned and watched the town below, guarded by the mountains on three sides and a river so blue and wild that she wondered how anyone could live anywhere else. She turned back to look up at him. "Where will you go from here?"
"Crooked Creek looks like a good place to begin again."
Looking at Emma, Latimer draped his arm over Emma's shoulders and guided her back down the hill. The setting sun kissed the peaks of the craggy mountains, and a pair of eagles soared overhead toward the sunset. She had no idea what awaited her tomorrow, but Emma knew she had a purpose and a life she loved in Crooked Creek. And that's the end of Emma of Crooked Creek. Next week, we'll be reading Hattie of Crooked Creek. She proved she was strong enough to survive. He proved he was strong enough to love her. I said we would probably have time for an additional story, and we certainly do. Let's go back to Elmer Kelton, whose stories we have read previously. We'll be reading a portion of Climb the Big Rim. This is from Elmer Kelton's Wild West, copyright 2018. This is a Forge book published by Tom Doherty Associates. Once again, this is Climb the Big Rim. Price Stockton and his own cowboys were ready to go next morning when Wade's men saddled up in the pre-dawn darkness. Wade had brought out a string of pack mules. These stood ready in the corral, packed with bedding and food and cooking utensils and grain for the horses. It would take grain to keep the herd in shape to outrun the wild Rafter T cattle. Stockton sat his saddle, tight-lipped and aloof. Wade had it on his tongue to say again that he would save Stockton and Bess, the ranch, if there was any way to do it. But faced with Stockton's coldness, he swallowed the words and motioned the men to start. Bess Henry and Mrs. Stockton stood in the doorway, watching them move out in single file. Wade studied the younger woman's face for some trace of kindness. All he found there was silent hostility. All right, then, he told himself bitterly. He would take their hatred as a challenge. He'd get those Rafter T cattle to market if he had to do it in spite of Bess Henry and Price Stockton and Lodge Agnew. It was past noon when they set up camp alongside a little creek down in the rough country to the south. It was rougher than anything Wade had seen on his ride from town. There seemed to be nothing but steep, rock-scattered hillsides, deep gullies and box canyons, but this is where the cattle were. Now and then on the trail out, they had seen some of them, but seldom for long. Usually they would be just a quick glimpse before the cattle would clatter down a slope or over a rocky hill with their heads wild and high and their tails arched. There were still lots of old longhorn in them, although most showed the sign of blood from some of the new breeds that were being brought into the country here and yonder. The rest of the day the punchers spent throwing a barricade across the front of a small box canyon that had grass and water. They left enough opening for an extra wide pole gate. Wade and Haddon snaked the pine poles down from the hillsides. As the men sat down to supper prepared by Chili, Stockton's hostile-eyed, big-mustached cook, Wade outlined his plan to them all. "This canyon will be our corral. This is where we'll bring them until we've got enough cattle to try making a drive to the railroad. We're going to gather in everything. There's 6- and 8-year-old bulls in these mountains that have never felled a branding iron or a knife. We'll catch them if we got to climb up and down the cliffs to do it." He glanced at Price Stockton, then back to the men. "From now on till we're through, I'm the boss. Any man who's afraid to chase a steer down one of those rocky slopes as hard as his horse can run had better leave now." He peered sharply at each of the Stockton men. There was only one who worried him, outside of Lodge Agnew. He was a small, middle-aged puncher named Corey Milholland. Wade could see the nervous twitching of a man's hands, the dread that crept into his eyes. It seemed to Wade that Milholland was a little fragile for this country. "How about it, Milholland?" he asked. "You want to leave?" Price Stockton whirled around from the coffee pot where he'd been filling his cup. "You leave Corey alone, Massey," he warned. "He's been with me for years. He's staying." Wade bit his lip. "Have it like you want it, Stockton, but I'll be watching him. He better keep up." They headed west from camp the next morning. 8 or 10 miles away, he dropped the riders out in a wide semicircle and started pushing back toward the Box Canyon Corral. It didn't take long for the action to start. Wade jumped a little bunch of mixed cattle in a valley. At the sight of him, they lifted their tails and struck out in a high lope for the south. Wade followed behind until he knew they would pass in front of the next rider to him. He reined up on a high point and watched in satisfaction as they bounced off of Snort Shanks and moved on to the next man. They would be run down by the time they reached the outside of the drive. The outside man would bring them in. Sitting on the point, Wade gazed out across the rocky hills ahead of him. They were rugged and perilous, mean and hard, but there was a majesty to them, he realized, a wild beauty that made a man want to stop and drink in a long look. Maybe if he stayed here long enough, he could learn to like the country a little, he admitted to himself. The drive went on about the way he had expected. Now and again he could hear the loud shouts of a cowboy or two as they raced to head off a bunch of runaway cattle. He had a good many of those races himself. More than once he spurred down a steep hillside after a big steer. It was all a man's heart could stand to watch his horse's flying hoofs slipping, sliding down those treacherous slopes. It was always a relief to see Snort down there at the bottom, waiting to pick up the steer and push him on. Snort had lucked onto a fairly gentle little bunch of cows and calves. These made it easier for him to catch and hold the waspier cattle. Along toward the middle of the afternoon, Wade stopped on a hill and took a long look around him, giving his horse a chance to get its wind after chasing two bulls for about a mile. On another hill, half a mile away, he could see a rider spurring hell-bent after an animal that had broken in the opposite direction from the roundup. The rider was an easy roping distance of the steer, but he didn't want to swing his loop. The steer plunged down off the slope. The cowboy reined up and stood on the rim of the hill, watching the steer get away. Anger flared through Wade. He recognized the horse as the one Corey Milholland had been riding. Any other puncher in the outfit would have gone down after that steer. Well, there'd be retribution tonight when the day's drive was done. The first day's gather was a good one, everything considered. The count was close to 100 head. The cowboys pushed most of them into the Box Canyon trap, roping and dragging in those that wouldn't be driven. Wade and Haddon dropped the poles into place in the gateway. The cook was finishing supper. Wade stopped close to the cooking fire. "Milholland," he called, "come over here." Nervously, the bent cowpuncher walked up to him. Price Stockton followed suspiciously. "I saw you let a steer get away this afternoon, Mulholland," Wade said severely. "He took off down a hill, and you didn't even make a move to stop him. You remember what I told you last night?" Silently, the cowpuncher shook his head. "All right, then," Wade spoke. "Get your gear together. You're leaving in the morning." Stockton stepped up beside Mulholland and stood there angrily, his face dark. "Maybe you need to remember what I told you last night, Massey. If you fire him, you've got me to whip first." Anger blazed in Wade. He glared at Stockton a moment. "If you want me to save your outfit for you, you've got to let me run this roundup." He thought he might stare Stockton down, but the ranchman held his ground. "You're running this roundup, Massey, but you're not firing my men." Wade had to give in. "You're winning this hand, Mulholland. I'm letting you stay against my better judgment. But from now on, you're riding with me. You'll make a hand if I've got to drag you." As they rode out the next morning in a different direction, Wade got a chance to move his horse up next to Stockton's. "Milholland's out of place here, Stockton," he said quietly. "Why keep trying to protect him like he was a little boy?" Stockton gazed straight ahead. "You think he's yellow, but he's not. He was with Glenn Henry the day Glenn roped a big steer and got jerked down off a bluff. Glenn wound up on a ledge about 40 feet below the trail, torn half to pieces. His horse was dead. Corey Mulholland crawled down to that ledge and worked Henry back up onto the trail a few inches at a time. It took guts to do it, Massey. If he had slipped, he could have fallen back down the bluff and been killed along with Glenn. He was afraid to leave Glenn alone up there, so he got him onto his own horse. Corey led the horse home, him walking alone, holding Glenn in the saddle half the time. It took him nearly 6 hours to make it. Glenn died anyway, but it wasn't Corey's fault. He did his best and risked being killed." Stockton took a deep breath and went on. "So you see why he didn't go off that hillside after that steer yesterday? He remembers what happened to Glenn, and you see why I'm keeping him, even if I've got to whip you to do it." The next few days the cowboys spent in drives similar to that of the first day, each time covering new ground and bringing in 75 to 100 or more cattle a day. By the time all the ground had been covered, there were around 800 head on grass and water in the canyon. During the drives, Wade kept Corey Mulholland close to him. The puncher was a little slow in following when the riding got tough, and occasionally he wouldn't follow at all. Had it been up to Wade, he would have let the man go. Lodge Agnew worried him, too. It wasn't anything he could put his finger on, but every time Wade turned his back on Agnew, he felt a tingling sensation up and down his spine. He knew that with him around, Agnew could still taste the threat of the penitentiary. Lodge made no attempt to get along, either with Wade or with Wade's cowboys. He was especially contemptuous of the two Mexicans. One night he called Felipe Sanchez Epilado, which in Spanish was like calling a man trash. Felipe jumped on his feet and whipped out a long-bladed knife. Before Wade could grab the vaquero and pull him away, blood dripped from a 3-inch gash along Agnew's cheek and spread onto his week's growth of beard. Wade took Felipe out away from the campfire, calmed him down a little, and gave him a long lecture. But a new dread edged in with all of his other troubles. He knew the fiery Felipe wouldn't be content to let the thing lie as it was now, and he knew Lodge knew it. But Felipe never got a chance to carry the fight any further. He didn't show up next afternoon at the end of the drive. When the day's catch of cattle had been put out into the canyon, the cowboys went back to look for him. They found his riderless horse first, with rope missing from the saddle. A little later they found Felipe at the bottom of a washout. His neck was broken. There were rope burns on his battered and torn body. "Dabbed a loop on something and then got tangled up in the rope," Snortshanks surmised. They took Felipe back to camp and dug a grave for him at the edge of the canyon. Stockton silently stood beside Wade as the last dirt was being shoveled into the hole. When the job was done, he called the crew around him. "The cattle have got to get used to being herded, if we're going to have any luck driving them out of here. This is as good a time as any to start. We'll set up guard shifts now, and we'll start night herding them." Agnew grunted. The reddish light of the campfire reflected from the bandage on his cheek. "They can't get away long as they're in that canyon. Looks to me like you're just trying to give us extra work." Wade said, "As long as I'm bossing this outfit, you'll do what I tell you, and you'll shut up about it." Agnew grumbled, "Maybe you won't be boss very long." The cowboys started scouting over the ground they had worked before. There were still a number of outlawed cattle there would have to be roped and dragged down out of the hills. Wade didn't want to move camp until the area had been cleaned up. For 3 days the cowboys scouted and brought down cattle that had gotten away from them. The going was much slower now, for a cowboy might spend a couple of hours catching just one steer or one tough old bull. In some cases, they would tie a gentler animal to the wild one, slowing the fire-eater down so he could be handled. Some of the outlaws had to be roped and thrown and wooden clogs tied to a foreleg. Then every time an animal tried to run, the long clog would get tangled with his feet and throw him for a loop. By the end of the second day, they had picked up only about 40 cattle. Wade was beginning to think about the long drive to the railroad. The afternoon of the third day, he almost met a fate similar to Felipe. Wade was working his way along a steep mountainside that had a sheer drop off the edge of the trail. Corey Milholland trailed along behind him. Corey had almost quit trying to make a hand after Felipe's death. When the chase got perilous, he would hold up and pick his way along. He let many an animal get away. It didn't do Wade any good to talk to him. He had about decided to start leaving Milholland in camp to help the cook. The first sign he had of danger was the sound of rock striking rock. Jerking his head up, he saw big rocks bouncing down the mountainside. "Get back, Milholland!" he yelled. He spurred hard, trying to get away from the rocks. He was almost in the clear when his horse stumbled and went to its knees. Before Wade could move, a rock the size of a washtub slammed into the animal's shoulder and knocked him off the trail. Wade choked off a cry of pain as he felt himself falling over the sheer edge. He grabbed at the shale and rocks as he slid. They broke his nails, tore his hands. Big rocks and little ones bounced off him as he rolled, fell, and slid. But at last he stopped. He wasn't on any ledge. It was merely a little jut in the steep slope. If he held still, he might hang on. If he tried to move, he would probably fall some more. Fire burned 100 places on his body. Pain lanced through him, seeming to pin him against the slope. His hat was gone. His shirt was ripped to shreds. Only his leather chaps had kept his legs from being torn as his arms were. Sweat burned into his skinned face as he slowly lifted his head and looked upward toward the trail. He figured he'd slid 30 or 40 feet. In a moment, the frightened Corey Milholland peered over the edge. Relief swelled over his face as he saw that Wade was still alive. "Hang on," he called. "I'll pitch you my rope." But the rope didn't reach. The end of it dangled a good 10 feet above Wade's head. Wade tried to inch up toward it, but he slipped and dropped another couple of feet down the slope. It was all up to Milholland now. Wade wouldn't have given a plug nickel for his chances in the cowpuncher's hands. He could see doubt and fear play across the man's face. Finally, Milholland spoke.
I'll try to work down there to where the rope will reach you. There's a big rock I may be able to tie onto. Hugging the slope, Wade could feel his heart hammering while Mulholland carefully worked down off the trail. He closed his eyes once as the puncher's foot slipped and a shower of dirt and pebbles came down. He expected to feel Corey's body slam into his and knock both of them on down the slope. But somehow Mulholland caught himself. In a few moments, he had worked down to where a large rock stuck up out of the slope. He tied his end of the rope to it, then pitched the other end of it to Wade. Reaching out for it, Wade felt himself slip. He grabbed the rope just as he started to slide on down it. Hitting the end of the rope sent new pain tearing through him, but the rope held, and Wade held to it. But the rope held, and Wade held to it. Painfully, he started working upward, hand over hand. It seemed it took him an hour to get up to that rock. Mulholland pulled him up to its temporary safety, then untied the rope. "I'll climb back up to the trail and pitch you the rope again," he said. "In your shape, you couldn't climb that slope any other way." Mulholland went up, then helped Wade work on back to the trail. Wade sat there, panting, wincing at the pain, and staring down at his dead horse far below. Finally, he looked up at Mulholland. "For a week now, Mulholland, I've been calling you a coward. I hope you'll let me take it back." Wade shoved out his hand, and Mulholland took it. Next day, Wade was too stiff and sore to go chasing wild cattle with the rest of the crew. He decided it was time to begin hunting for a new trail to the railroad. He loaded a pack mule with enough supplies to last a week, then struck out northward. He took Corey Mulholland with him. We haven't finished the story, but we've run out of time. I love the Western imagery in Elmer Kelton's stories.
Thank you for joining us for Western Short Stories. This has been Dan Klingler, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.
An old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a plowing through the ragged sky, and up the cloud he draw.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Noon Book Hour, followed by Eyes on Success at 1:00.